Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Well, congratulations to Crystal Palace. Fantastic result for them. I think we didn't deserve to lose. I think Palace gave us a very difficult game, and for me the result should be a draw, which would still be a bad result for us. We did enough not to lose.
More misery for the Chelsea Blues. City keep on rolling. They also add a big name, and over in Italy, a new champion, EFW, starts now.
I'm away to the beat going.
Here is the Spanish international. It's a good ball in. It's an equalising goal for Chelsea. Radamel Falcao on as a substitute and on to the rescue for Jose Mourinho's team. Blasi again, held up by Zuma. Sacco! Connor Wickham has made it 2-1. Is history going to repeat itself? Ward has got there. Joel Ward nipping in.
What a finish. What a game for Crystal Palace.
I'ma wait till the beat go in.
They beat the Chelsea Blues 2-1 at Stamford Bridge, no less. Mourinho's second loss ever as Chelsea manager at Stamford Bridge. Two losses in 100. Not a bad record for him there, Thomas.
It's a great record.
It is a fantastic record.
Sorry, I had a little mic problem right there.
It's all right. Shut up. I like it better when you don't talk anyway.
So stop asking me questions.
It's a pretty good record, but it's seemingly getting worse over the last couple of seasons, maybe aside from last year. 2-1, Crystal Palace beat Chelsea. That's the big news of the week from the games. We'll get to so much. A lot of transfer talk going on. The deadline is coming up. And if you didn't know already, this is European Football Weekly. I'm Dan Riccio. He's Thomas Migalakos. At Dan Riccio 590 is where you can get me. At Unfit Ref is where you can get him. And this is going to be one heck of a show. And it's been one heck of a weekend and one heck of a year so far in the Premier League, especially for the away sides. Never mind this 2-1 win for Crystal Palace. I think only 21% of home teams in the Premier League so far this year have actually won their games, Thomas.
Yeah, it's unheard of. I think coming into this weekend, only 6 home wins.
Yeah, and usually that number is around 45% of the games usually account for home victories. Right now, that number is way, way off the pace. So don't get me wrong. I mean, things will eventually correct themselves. You don't just change up 100 years of history in 1 year. But this is kind of crazy the way it's gone on.
Yeah, it's crazy, Dan. Very crazy.
I was expecting you to say something along the lines of, well, this is why away teams are winning.
No, I really don't have an answer to why away teams are winning. Because if I did have an answer, all the managers would be calling me right now and asking my opinion. I have no idea why this is happening. The atmosphere is the same. The teams are roughly the same. The best have gotten better.
There has to be some sort of tactical change in the works here. Like, you look at everything, and there's the away loss for Chelsea, or sorry, the away win for Crystal Palace over Chelsea. You had the West Ham win 3-0 over Liverpool. They also beat Arsenal at home in the week one of the season. And then they were at home against Leicester and Bournemouth, and they lost both of those games. And you know what's...
See, no rhyme or reason.
What's more interesting to me is, like, this isn't smash and grab type of victories. This is Crystal Palace going to Stamford Bridge and playing. They were playing a strict counter-attacking style, but they didn't park the bus. We'll talk about Slaven Bilic and his parking the bus abilities later on in the show. But it's different. And Alan Pardew seems to have some sort of magical
formula
against Jose Mourinho. Actually, let's go to that right now, because he is the one manager who's better than anybody else against Jose Mourinho. And here he is speaking post-game.
There's a little-known stat that was delivered towards the end, which was that you're the first manager to ever to beat Jose Mourinho on three occasions. It's a nice little record to have, I guess.
It is. Very proud of that, because he is the top man, and he was very honourable in defeat today.
He was very honourable in defeat. And actually, in one of Mourinho's post-games, he wanted to say specifically, we talk about Crystal Palace first because they deserve it. They played really well.
But here's the thing, though.
We didn't deserve to lose.
Exactly.
Is how he...
Yeah. He's very honorable to your face. Good game. You
but
played
then he
well.
Puts an asterisk
yeah,
on
of
it.
Course. There's a backhanded compliment right there, you know?
But that's how it worked out. And Alan Pardew, like, for all that Newcastle fan said about him, I think now with Crystal Palace, he has won 9 of 12 Premier League away matches. And look, it has a lot to do with the amount of pace that they have on the wings. They are just so great at counterattacking with guys like Bolasie and...
Who they were able to keep hold of.
Wilfried Zaha, who's been able to do some good things. He hasn't really been in the squad completely. But then there's this new guy whom they got for free from Wolves, Bakary Sakho, who scored the opening goal in this one and is just a menace down the right wing.
Well, he's been a goal machine for Wolves, if you've followed them in the championship. He's been scoring like crazy. He's a big guy. Used to have dreads, I believe.
Yeah.
Five
goals, 4 assists in his last 9 matches between Wolves and Crystal Palace.
Again, we'll see the cream rising to the top later on, because we look at the standings right now and you got Crystal Palace, Leicester, and Swansea in the top 4.
Yeah.
You got Gomes, Mahrez being the top scorers in the league. It's not going to stay this way, but I want to know what's going on with Chelsea. What is exactly going on with Chelsea? They're second worst in conceding. They've conceded 9 goals to Sunderland's 10. The same back 4 were playing last year. They're 4-0 at this point in last year's season. I've allowed 6 goals, scored 15. So I think that's the problem. They're not scoring. Costa had like about 6 or 7 goals at this point last season.
If you want to use the hashtag EFW590 and tell us what you think is wrong with Chelsea, please do so on the Twitter. You can tag us as well, at DanRicho590, at UnfitRef. So Chelsea have conceded 2-plus goals in 4 consecutive games for the first time since December 2006. You're right. There is a lot wrong with Chelsea right now, especially on the defensive end of the pitch. And maybe that's kind of where we all thought they would be fine even this year. And maybe that's something on all of us pundits, I guess, if you want to call us that.
We just assume things?
Yeah. To not kind of look into the future and be like, well, John Terry really getting up there in age. Gary Cahill certainly didn't look great towards the end of last season.
Ivanovic is the one that's surprising me.
And that's the one that we've been talking about throughout the first 4 weeks of the season. And Mourinho had an interesting comment post-game about his players and about how the game turned out. Let's let you hear it. Here's Jose Mourinho post-game.
I cannot say that I had 11 players at the same time performing, to be fair. 2 or 3 of them, the individual performance was far from good. You know, I blame myself for not to change one of them, because I kept him in the game for 90 minutes. And when I made the 3rd change, I realized that I needed a 4th, and I don't have a 4th.
And so who's the one player that you would have liked to take?
It's the last thing I'm going to tell you. You know me.
It's the last thing I'm going to tell you. Thomas, let's let our listeners on European Football Weekly know who that one player that Jose Mourinho should have subbed should have been. Do you have a theory on this? Well,
it's very difficult to look because they were all bad, in my opinion. But it's hard to look at one player and say, I don't know, that's a tough one. Throwing me on the spot here. Ivanovic?
Ivanovic is a good choice. And he, again, you can pinpoint him on the goals.
But Fabregas, too, wasn't.
And Fabregas was awful. ESPN FC, in their player ratings for this game, they gave Fabregas a 3 out of 10. These guys, they're not just bad. They are awful. They are borderline unable to even be anywhere near worthy of being on the pitch. And I think something's playing off your computer. It's really distracting.
Yeah, it's Jose Mourinho talking right now.
Eden Hazard, still on summer holiday. He doesn't look anything like the player he was last year. And towards the end of last year, he carried this team, certainly. Pedro, the one guy they brought in and are actually playing, he's the one who's actually looked good.
Look, I'm going to say one thing before we move on. They're not scoring at the same rate as last season. We can all look at the defensive line. It's all the same as last year. They're not scoring. They have 9 less goals this year as in last year. Plain and simple, that's 8 points, and that's why they're not 4-0.
And maybe they shouldn't have sold Peter Cech.
Yeah, you're not going to give me that one, though. Come on. Courtois amazing.
One parting shot, or actually 2 parting shots. Here's some interesting stats for you on European Football Weekly. I'm Dan Riccio, Thomas Michalakos, talking about Chelsea. And Mourinho's last 7 Premier League defeats have come against a manager who has the letter P starting his surname.
Oh, man, move on.
Alan Pardew accounts for 3 of them, so that's great. I guess Tony Pulis is in there somewhere.
Not a real stat.
Chelsea's 4 points through 4 matches are the second worst by a reigning champion. Blackburn's 3-95-6 are the worst for a Premier League defending champion. Yes. Yes. If your ears perked when you heard Blackburn is a former Premier League champion,
do your history.
You should know better.
Yeah, do your lesson. Get a history lesson.
All right,
the Premier League.
Let's head over to Manchester and Manchester City specifically. Ho hum, they get another shutout victory, 2-0 over Watford. One of the few big name clubs in the Premier League that is actually doing the business against the lower level clubs right now. And City, 12 points, perfect record, 4-4. They've won 10 games going back to last year on the bounce. Cool, comfortable, everything's going right.
4 clean
sheets. Manchester City. Jennifer Lawrence.
4 clean sheets, 10 goals. Sterling looks amazing.
They are sexy.
They are. And now with De Bruyne coming in?
Just like Jennifer Lawrence, especially in those leaked Twitter pictures. Yeah. I know you looked at them.
No, never did.
Yeah, you did.
No, I didn't.
You're just saying that because your wife might be listening.
Nope, just wrong, Dan. I know you did, though.
In any case, City are looking very, very good. They're silky smooth. Everything seems to be working with this team right now. First half, they go goalless with Manchester or with Watford in this one. What does Manuel Pellegrini do? 2 minutes, he shifts Silva over to the left, moves Sterling into the middle. 2 minutes later, Sterling scoring a goal.
Yeah, you should play him there more often. Like,
they can do no wrong right now. It's unbelievable how things are working out for Manchester City. And they go out and they make 2 of the three of the top 5 Premier League sales or purchases this summer have been Manchester City. 1, Raheem Sterling, talked about him. Kevin De Bruyne, he's coming in. And Nicolas Otamendi was the one they bought last week. So De Bruyne, the numbers on him, $55 million £55 million transfer fee. And if you include wages on his 6-year deal, it's £138 million deal.
He didn't really get a chance at Chelsea. And
no, he didn't.
When they sold him last year, I think Wolfsburg made like a $30 million profit on that.
In 1 year.
Not even. He was sold in January.
It was triple.
Yeah, it was triple. Unbelievable.
It was triple.
Did Mourinho get it wrong?
Mourinho did get it wrong. And he actually addressed this at some point in the offseason. And he said that De Bruyne was crying out to be sold because he didn't want to fight for his place in the team.
Might have just not been the right fit, right manager.
Maybe not.
Because he killed it clearly for Wolfsburg when he went there.
And he was actually purchased last summer, not in January.
Wasn't Schürrle in January?
Schürrle.
Sorry, my bad.
But De Bruyne, 10 goals, 21 assists in the Bundesliga last year. He created the second most chances out of players in the top 5 European leagues, only behind Dimitri Payet, of course, who now plays for West Ham. The other, De Bruyne, Sterling, Otamendi, the other 2 most expensive Premier League transfers so far this summer, Benteke and Firmino.
So and we all know how that's going.
Although Anthony Martial is on his way to Manchester United, and that is where we head now, as actually this one was in Wales. 2-1, Manchester United lose to Swansea, and they have a pretty atrocious record right now against Swansea. I think they did the double on them last year. Gary Monk just absolutely owns LVG in a similar way to Alan Pardew on Jose Mourinho right now.
Yeah, and just the way they won too, coming back after being down by one. And you said it to me earlier on. We all know who is the better AU brother right now.
Yeah,
it's definitely Andre. It's the older brother. It's the big brother.
It's the one who was actually a free transfer. Can you just mute your computer? I mean, I know the people listening probably can't hear it, but it's so distracting for me.
Look, I'm going to blame ESPN.
Have you ever used a computer before?
Yeah, I'm going to blame ESPN FC for always going to a page and then playing a video without giving you a warning.
Turn autoplay off. Have you ever heard of that?
That doesn't work.
Or just turn the sound off on your computer. That also helps.
You have the controls.
You have the control on your own computer. Bottom right corner, the little speaker thing. Killing me right now. We're wasting so much time on this.
Stop talking about it. Move on.
Dan Riccio and the idiot, Thomas Michalakos.
Well, that was
right
harsh.
Here with you on European Football Weekly. I'm not going to apologize.
That's harsh.
I'm not apologizing. I don't care. LVG won't apologize to you either. especially in that Dutch accent that you make fun of all the time. So Manchester United lose this one. Kind of like Jose Mourinho did with Crystal Palace, I almost want to talk about Swansea first before we get to Manchester United, who actually did play well in this game, and they did dominate it, certainly at points in the first half. They just obviously couldn't get more than the Juan Mata goal, which opened the game. But Gary Monk is, like, really on the rise as a manager, and we talked about it a little bit last year. He is one of the more interesting blokes when it comes to gaffers on the pitch in Premier League right now.
Yeah, and you know, Swansea City is the example of all these small market teams that are coming into the Premier League to stay sustainable, to actually do well. They've won a trophy. So they're the benchmark for success, and kudos to him. He's done a fantastic job, ex-player, ex-Swans player, obviously. And yeah, he really has his team going. And Bafétimbi Gómez has been on fire, and you gotta love his celebration after every goal.
No, I hate it.
You love it.
It's the worst thing ever.
You do it to your TV when you watch it.
Why is he on all fours like that?
You do it to your TV. You mimic it at home.
It's the dumbest thing ever. I don't get it.
Oh, come on. It's funny.
How is it funny? It looks creepy.
Because it's an adult man on all fours crawling and roaring to the crowd. How is that not humorous?
I think this is the dumbest thing we've ever heard.
It's the dumbest thing we've ever seen, Bafétimbi Gómez.
And it's amazing.
I almost want him to stop scoring because it's just gotten to levels of ridiculous.
You're just filled with selfish hate.
But Gary Monk made one notable change in this game that really shook things up. At the half, he put on Ki Sung Young for Wayne Routledge, and it just changed the whole game around. To that point, United was pretty comfortable. They just couldn't really pull away. After that change was made, Swansea really made some things happen, and they took advantage of the two fullbacks for United really trying to bomb up the pitch, Matteo Darmian and Luke Shaw. You look at both goals, where are the fullbacks?
You know what? I'm going to look at the second goal and say, where was the goalie on that one? Because that was a pretty soft goal.
Sergio Romero?
Yeah, it was a really soft goal for his center. He's played well up until now.
It's a perfect ball through by Ayew.
No, it was a great pass. Oh. But as a keeper,
outside of the boot, yummy.
But as a keeper, as a manager, Van Gaal is going to be looking at that and going, yeah, he could have made that save. It was soft. It was soft.
I think it wasn't so soft, and I'd prefer to just applaud the lovely movement on the pitch from the Swans, which it was. And Andre Ayew put in a perfect, perfect pass for Bafétimbi Gómez on that one. And
to put in a soft goal.
I think it was probably Luke Shaw who was disappeared on that goal. And he just bombed too far up the pitch. I think it's a good mix between those two. Like, Luke Shaw is that guy who likes to go forward and be that adventurous fullback. Darmian, being in his Italian heritage, in his Italian roots, he's gonna be the safer of the two. And that's kind of a good mix for them to have, in the same way that Chelsea did so well last season with Ivanovic bombing up the pitch and Azpilicueta being very conservative in his play. So I feel like over time that is going to develop. Luke Shaw looks like miles ahead of the player that he was last year. I think we both agree that Darmian has had a good showing in his first few games for Manchester United. But Louis van Gaal talked about the shape of the team after the game and made sure not to put the blame on himself for United falling behind in this one.
Is that something that you can coach into the players or something they'll have to figure out for themselves?
No, when I can only change, so I have changed. And then the shape was again in our benefit because we are dominating the game again. But I think the players has to read the game for themselves. And that's why I said also in the dressing room, yeah, we need also players to keep the team together at that moment.
Yeah, and I think he makes a good point there. Like, you know, he sets up the team. They look to be in a good position. And then the players, you know, they just had some mental mistakes and they got out of position. It's not necessarily the manager's fault.
No, at times the manager does take the blame for it because you're putting that team out. But what else can you do after that?
Yeah, exactly. If the players are making mistakes, then so be it.
Although it is a mistake that he's going to sell De Gea right now.
Manchester United transfer news. Sounds like David De Gea has, they have agreed a transfer fee to send him to Real Madrid. 35 million euros, is it?
Yeah, it's 35 million euros. Plus, I'm hearing reports that they're trying to throw in Keylor Navas into that.
Interesting. And of course, David De Gea's contract is up at the end of the year, which is kind of suppressing his cost, or else, you know, if he had 4 years left on his deal, it'd be 100 million probably. Well, not that much, but a lot more, because you look at who Manchester United is about to buy in Anthony Martial from Monaco, and that's a 60 million euro deal. He is 19 years old, very unproven. Some have compared him to be the next Thierry Henry. That's obviously very premature. Saw him a little bit in the Champions League when Monaco played Juve last year.
He's played well.
He's pacey. You can see all the talents that make him a fun player, but still a lot of money to be playing for a very unproven player. And probably, you know, you look at Memphis Depay and how he's still working his way through, and you look at all these young players on Manchester United, they need some proven players. They need some more experience other than Bastian Schweinsteiger.
Yeah, they're all on the same level, really. Yeah. And when you're faced with adversity, you need those veterans. You need those guys to lift you up a little bit. And yeah, we'll see.
Over in Liverpool, your boys stunk this weekend. Like, they were really bad. It's stinking up the room right
now. I had it on both my TVs. My whole house smelled after the game.
It's as bad as Memphis Depay's outfit when he showed up at the Dutch national team camp today.
I didn't even see it.
Oh,
no,
so bad. Awful. We'll talk about another one in just a second. Like, terrible, terrible fashion choices by Premier League players. But it's 3-0 for West Ham. We're talking about it all the time. What's up with the Premier League away victories? Dejan Lovren had a big part in this one. Finally had his bad game after, you know, really looking impressive through three matches.
In pure Dejan Lovren fashion, that goal.
So bad. But Slaven Bilic talked about his philosophy going into this game, and it's just such a good clip that we couldn't let it pass.
You joked midweek that you would come here and park a triple-decker bus, but it was more than that today, wasn't it?
I mean, we parked the bus, but there's no, but we didn't put a handbrake on. I mean, and there's nothing wrong to park the bus. That means that when your opponent's got a ball, you are behind the ball. It doesn't necessarily to be the problem is when you park the bus in your box, or in just in front of you. But if you're moving with the bus, it is simply great defending.
That's a lot of talk about buses. And the best way of explaining parking the bus that I've ever heard.
Yeah, but how is a bus parked and it's moving at the same time?
But
doesn't make any sense.
Like, they didn't look like they parked the bus.
Of course not. And they didn't. They played well. Liverpool didn't have any width.
Yeah.
Everything was down the middle. And they sprung on the counterattack and poor defending each and every time. They deserve the victory. Liverpool were awful.
Firmino's first start for Liverpool in this one. How do you look?
He looked all right. He hit the post with a 30-yarder. But, you know, he's still finding his legs in the Premier League. And there's really no style, no vision. It's just awful.
That's Thomas Michalakos. I'm Dan Riccio. Andres Cordero of BN Sports is going to come up on the show with us in just a couple of minutes. But first, Newcastle losing 1-0 at home to Arsenal. Mitrovic red card. This is the story of the game. 31 minutes in. It wasn't a red for me.
No, it wasn't a red. It wasn't a red. He stomped on him, but you could see that he was following the ball. It wasn't deliberate. It wasn't malicious.
It was a 50-50 ball. He was late for it. Definitely deserved a yellow. At first I said that's never a red. I changed my thoughts a little bit. I could see why Andre Mariner gave the red in this situation, because it is a bit of a stomp, but I think it's nothing malicious in it. It's just Mitrovic is late.
Oh, I know why he got the red, and it's two words, and you said it. Andre Mariner, the worst referee in the Premier League.
I don't think he was so horrible in this one.
He's awful.
He had a few bad decisions. Arsenal deserved a penalty at one point, and I don't think this was a red card. So Mitrovic, here's a funny stat. 15 minutes into this game, he gets the red card. His first match in the Premier League took him 22 seconds to get his first booking in the Premier League. Second match took him a minute and 31 seconds to get a yellow card.
Look, not a lot of people know who Mitrovic is. He scored a lot of goals in the Belgian Premier League. Okay, this is what happens when you come...
one hell of a reputation.
Yeah, but this is what happens when you come to Newcastle. Papi Cisse, same thing. A lot of goals in the German Bundesliga. You come to Newcastle, end of your
career. Still just 20 years old. He can kind of be a cult hero with Newcastle.
He has that feel, yeah.
His outfit, though, upon joining the Serbian national team, unbelievable. So great. Great cleavage on his t-shirt. Basically, that's what it was. It's a black t-shirt with boobs.
I don't follow the Premier League fashion trends like you do, Dan.
Just loving it. There's all kinds of good stuff coming out of Premier League guys and their fashion sense. Probably not all that great. Transfer window is closing fast. And finally, the managers can get settled in because we know how much they've complained about it over the last couple of weeks. The latest, Louis van Gaal. We'll leave you with that as European Football Weekly continues.
Be happy.
You are asking now things what you don't know, what I don't know. You think you are smarter than I, but it is not like that. I'm
okay,
sorry.
Guys. Thank you. Thank you.
I'm sorry.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
More on the wall. Pjanic. Oh, it's a masterpiece. Over the wall and into the net. And Roma's in front. Oh, it's a world-class free kick from Milan Pjanic. And listen to the Stadio Olimpico. No silent protests anymore. Gets it over the wall. It bends. It has plenty of power behind it. And Gianluigi Buffon, no chance. It struck perfectly from the Bosnian midfielder.
It was all Bosnia against Juventus yesterday as Roma win 2-1 on goals from Miralem Pjanic, a beautiful free kick, and another goal, his first in the Italian Serie A for Edin Dzeko.
Forza Juve.
Yeah, it's great. Losing the first two matches of the year. I'm Dan Riccio. That's Thomas Michalakos. We're going to take our tour around Europe now, and we do so with one of our favorite guests on the show, and that is Andres Cordero, commentator for beIN Sports. Andres, so good of you to join us once again. Thanks for doing it.
Yeah, thanks so much, guys. Thankfully, it's nice and dry down here in Miami today. We were supposed to have a hurricane, but apparently it's just missed us, and just in case, you know, the beer stocked with fridge, the pantry's got a bunch of canned goods, and I can promise that the beer won't go to waste.
Well, that's always good news, and it's a good thing that you have some... Actually, there's no football this week, so that's actually disappointing, except for Euro qualifiers eventually.
He's not stocking any water either. All I heard was beer.
You don't always need
water. Water and beer, right?
Yeah. The same thing. So that was quite the game yesterday. Roma winning 2-1 over Juventus. I don't want to say it felt like a passing of the torch, but it certainly felt like Roma's saying the title race is definitely on this year more than it was the last two.
Yeah, I've been one of the ones that have been arguing that it will be more of a title race, and not necessarily because Juve won't be as good. I think Juve will improve and will be better throughout the season than what they've shown in this opening couple of games. But because Roma got what they so desperately needed the last couple of seasons, and that's a goal scorer up top that can make use of all that fantastic service that they get from the wings, even from their fullbacks. You know, they move the ball so well. We've gotten accustomed to seeing Roma play an attractive brand of football under Rudy Garcia, but sometimes the end product was lacking there. And Edin Dzeko looks every bit like he belongs on this Roma team. Had a bunch of chances against Verona week one. Didn't really get on the score sheet, but he did have an assist, and so he does get his first Serie A goal against Juve, no less.
Juventus, it's been quite the offseason of change for them, as everybody's been talking about, but I mean, as much as they brought in a lot of players and there's been injuries, Simone Padoin filling in that regista role that has been voided by Andrea Pirlo, it doesn't look like a title-winning side right now.
Right, well, you know, Allegri gets a little bit of a pass in that, Claudio Marchisio is missing, Sami Khedira is still out with an injury, and those are two players expected to get significant playing time, and obviously Simone Padoin is not. But I'm still not 100% sure what Allegri is doing at the start of the season. I don't understand why Alvaro Morata is on the bench, why Roberto Pereira is on the bench, why Juan Cuadrado is on the bench, and against Roma, no less. And even, you know, to a lesser extent, Rugani. You know, obviously, with Barzagli, Bonucci, and Chiellini, those would be the starting three most games. But in this case, you didn't have all three of them, and Casillas got to start while Rugani sitting on the bench. How much that might have to do with maybe them trying to shop him? I'm not sure, you know, what dealings were going on behind the scenes, but certainly Rugani, who played every game last season in Serie A, who played every game in Serie B the season before that, who does look like the future of the Italian national team as far as the center back position goes, I'm not sure why he's not a little bit higher in the depth chart maybe than Martin Cáceres. Well, Cáceres has been there for some time. I think this wasn't Allegri's strongest starting 11, especially against Roma at the Stadio Olimpico. I did think he made some adjustments toward the end, and when you bring Pereira on as a trequartista with Dybala and Morata up top, those are probably his best options in attack for the season. But it's for that reason that I'm not all that thrilled with Juve signing Mario Mandzukic, who's a good goal scorer, who will score goals, but I don't think he's a good buy for Juve, because he'll keep either Morata or Dybala on the bench for some important games, and I do think those two up top are the best option for Allegri.
Juve is the sexy story of, you know, the woes that's going on there with Allegri and the whole, you know, 0-2. But Roma, they've brought in Szczesny, they've brought in Edin Dzeko, Mohamed Salah. What do you think is going to be the most impactful of those signings for Roma?
Well, Dzeko certainly, because he fills a need, right? And he's not exactly sharp as of yet, even though he's looked good so far in the early going. He's not as good as he would like to be in terms of accuracy. He's a player who's only played 11 games in the Premier League last season with Manchester City. He still managed to score 4 goals in the Premiership, but, you know, he's getting good service. He's racking up chances. I think he had something like 11 chances over 2 games, certainly double digits against Verona and Juventus. He does have a goal and the assist, as we mentioned, but I think that was the missing piece that they didn't quite get in Seydou Doumbia when they brought him over from CSKA Moscow. Dzeko does look more like a player who can fit that role. But one of the guys that I'm really excited about for Roma is a player you didn't mention. It's Luca Digne, the French international, who's projected to be the starting left back for France at Euro 2016. He's supremely talented, coming over from PSG, where he was kept on the bench by Maxwell, maybe more because Maxwell has that sort of telepathic connection with Zlatan Ibrahimovic than because he's necessarily better than Luca Digne. You know, he's good going forward without necessarily jeopardizing the defensive responsibility, and he looked fantastic against Juventus. A guy who played for Rudy Garcia at Lille. That was when PSG decided to pay almost $20 million for him. And so to see him there, he's a massive upgrade over Ashley Cole and a very good signing for Roma.
Andres, I'm always thoroughly impressed with your pinpoint pronunciations of all the different teams in all the different languages. It never ceases to amaze me.
Yeah, you know, Spanish was my first language, and I think I've got the Romance languages down pat when it comes to pronunciations. A lot of that is research, but it certainly helps that I'm not as Anglo as many of the guys covering the game in the U.S.
And I'm on the other side. I bastardized the English language, and I'm awful at butchering everyone's names.
We all know that. Anybody who listens to the show knows that, Thomas. Dre, I think you had a hand in calling PSG's big 3-0 win over Monaco yesterday on BN Sport. Angel Di Maria making his debut. How did he look?
He looked fantastic coming off the bench. Honestly, he looked like he'd been there for a couple of seasons. And I think it was a lot of the relief to be out of Manchester United and the dumpster fire that United has seemed over the last couple of seasons since Sir Alex Ferguson's departure. He's at a team now where they're expected to win, where they're happy to have him, and he knows he's going to get plenty of playing time. You know, it was smart of Laurent Blanc to bring him off the bench against Monaco rather than put him straight into the starting 11. We saw him combine well with Ezequiel Lavezzi. You know, Lavezzi obviously was a player that everyone thought Di Maria would be coming in to replace, and he would be an upgrade if he plays wide. But a lot of Di Maria's, you know, best impact against Monaco came from the central areas. He had a fantastic assist, something like a 50-yard, 60-yard pass to Lavezzi that resulted in the 3-0. He looked very sharp, looked very much at home. And I think one of the great things to watch, if you followed PSG throughout some of the offseason, I actually had a chance to see them play the Trophée des Champions in Montreal against Lyon right before the Ligue 1 season started. And they all seem so happy to have Angel Di Maria there. So I think he feels important, which is something he maybe didn't feel under Louis van Gaal. He's full of confidence, and I think he's going to make an absolutely huge impact when it comes to the Champions League for PSG. In Ligue 1, they probably didn't necessarily need a 63 million euro signing to win Ligue 1 for, a fourth consecutive year perhaps, but for the Champions League, where they have been knocking on that door the last couple of seasons. You know, they've been drawn against either Chelsea or Barcelona. Last season, they get past Chelsea and they get knocked out by Barcelona. So I think Di Maria certainly improves them when it comes to the European picture.
Switching over to La Liga, Real Madrid, huge win after a not-so-good start, 0-0. Rafa Benitez, what is your take on him as Real Madrid manager and all the things that are coming down the pipeline now about him and Ronaldo and how Ronaldo's playing? And is it a good fit?
Well, it's not as good a fit as Carlo Ancelotti. And I think even, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo will admit to that. Ancelotti became a hugely popular manager in the Spanish capital after what was a really difficult breakup with Jose Mourinho, left behind sort of a poisonous air in that locker room, which has traditionally been a difficult locker room to manage. And Benitez has had a history of some clashes with players and maybe not managing the locker room in the absolute best way. And so it was a bizarre change, considering how much the players liked Ancelotti, how successful they had been with Ancelotti, you know, winning La Decima the year before he was fired, and coming away with, 92 points in La Liga, you know, losing out to an historically good Barcelona, who finished the year with 94 points. So it was a head-scratcher, to the extent that even the Real Madrid president Florentino Perez didn't have a good answer when he was asked why Ancelotti needed to be fired. He literally said, "I don't know," which was as bizarre a moment as there was last season in La Liga. But Benitez, you know, he brings some defensive solidity to Real Madrid. That 4-2-3-1 has seen them improve, I think, defensively in some ways. For this last game against Betis, where they won 5-0, Betis was not a very good barometer for Real Madrid, obviously, especially at the Santiago Bernabeu. Maybe a better game in the return leg, or rather the second half of the season at the Benito Villamarín, which is a difficult place to play. But in this game, Madrid put 5 goals up with virtually the same kind of 11 that we would have seen from Carlo Ancelotti. That meant that James was there on the right, Gareth Bale was on the pitch as well, Benzema and Cristiano Ronaldo. And that meant that Isco continues to be the 12th man, which is a move I don't necessarily agree with, but they're almost obligated to play. Rafa Benitez is almost obligated to play Gareth Bale because of the transfer fee paid for him. Isco was $30 million, which is by no means cheap, but it's not the $100 million that they paid for Gareth Bale. And so it's not a 12th man to have, but I do think Real Madrid are going to be good no matter who they put on the pitch. The question is, can they be better? I think the answer is yes if Isco is there instead of Bale.
So Rafa Benitez with Real Madrid this year equals what? How many trophies are we looking at here, Dre?
Well, they're good enough to win La Liga. The question is, are Barcelona as good or better than they were last year? And remember, Barca are bringing in some important reinforcements in the January transfer window,
right. Players
that have already been signed but can't be inscribed because of the transfer ban. I think Arda Turan will improve them, provide depth and competition in midfield. And obviously, Aleix Vidal adds some depth in a place where they need it, because we saw with Dani Alves down, Sergio Roberto has had to be used. He's a virtually newly promoted Barca B player, was more of a central midfielder. He's played it right back for Barcelona in the last couple of games. Aleix Vidal can play in that position, spelling Dani Alves, can also play as a right winger when needed. So I think Barcelona will be better the second half of the year than they are the first, as they were last season. Remember, last year, up until the winter break, Real Madrid were considered the best team on the planet. They'd gone on a Spanish record 22-game win streak. They were, top of the table, and then it didn't necessarily come apart, because of some injuries like Luka Modric and James, but it's just that Barcelona were so much better during the second half. I do think they're good enough this year. They're deeper, Real Madrid, than they were last year. They've got some interesting backups in the likes of Kovacic and Casemiro, who's come back from loan. So they're good enough to win La Liga. They're always good enough to win the Champions League. It's up in the air to see what they can really win. They've got the talent, but I'll tell you what, if Rafa Benitez doesn't win La Liga with this group of players, the most talented group he's ever managed, it'll be hard for him to ever win a league title. He's always, been more of a cup manager. He can do those short competitions very well over two legs. He's very difficult to beat because his teams are so good defensively. But this is the most talented squad that he's ever had at his disposal.
So speaking of Barcelona, you mentioned the transfer ban, but one guy they brought in last year that had virtually no impact on last season is now flourishing through the first two La Liga games of the season, and that is Thomas Vermaelen. What is going on? Like, are we spinning back the clock a few years? Like, what has Vermaelen done that has been so impressive with Barcelona?
Well, he's gone from a joke to a threat, hasn't he? Because he won more titles than games played last season for Barcelona, obviously with the injuries. And it didn't help that Andoni Zubizarreta, the former sporting director who brought Thomas Vermaelen over from Arsenal, had said that Vermaelen will make an immediate impact. And then, of course, he went on to not feature at all at the very, very end of last season. But, you know, I think it was a case of out of sight and out of mind. You know, you forget that this guy was an Arsenal captain, that he was very good for Belgium, that he's a very solid defender. And there have been shades in his play to what you saw at Barcelona from Carles Puyol, that sort of like last line of defense that can make up for some of the defensive errors that are inherent in having a very high back line, which Barcelona does. His recovery, his speed, you know, he's not an absolute blazer when it comes to speed, but he's fast enough to get there and make up for some of those deficiencies that are inherent in that high back line. He's looked fantastic. He scored a goal, of course, which one of the hilarious moments this weekend was asked why he didn't really celebrate the goal. He said, "I'm not used to scoring goals. I didn't know what to do." So he just kind of smiled cheaply after scoring what was a brilliant half-volley or volley, which was worth all 3 points to Barcelona. So I think he adds a lot if he's able to stay healthy, and that's obviously a big if, but they certainly took their time bringing him back. He should be healthy, should be able to stay that way. And, you know, there's a bit more versatility now to that back line because he is similar in some respects to Piqué, but you could line him and Piqué up at the center of Barcelona's defense and move Javier Mascherano up into a defensive midfield role at times, depending on the opponent, depending on rotations. That also frees up Sergi Busquets to play more of the Xavi role in midfield. So it doesn't necessarily have to be Busquets or Mascherano in central midfield. So while Barcelona have a very thin squad, as we've seen with some injuries to the likes of Dani Alves and Adriano, their players are very versatile and they can play a variety of positions. And I think they're thin, you know, on purpose. They're thin by design because the quality of the players they bring in is so high that they're not really players that want to be on the bench.
That's the voice of Andres Cordero of BN Sports on Twitter. He describes himself as a box-to-box broadcaster. And you can hear him on this show from time to time, and we thank him very much for doing so. Dre, always a pleasure. Stay away from that hurricane, yeah?
Yep, appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
Cheers. At Dre Cordero is where you can get him on the Twitter. Just want to make a couple of mentions before we go here. Over in Serie A, Inter are the only one of the quote-unquote big sides with 6 points right now. Stefan Jovetic has 3 goals through 2 games.
Is he going to win the goal-scoring title?
I don't know if he'll be Capo Cañonere because he'll get hurt at some point, but I think it's just hilarious how these, you know, there's so many Premier League cast-offs that do so well away from the league as soon as they leave.
Well, it goes to show you that sometimes, you know, the Premier League's not the right place for all players.
I think it's also just a fit thing. And you look at Roberto Soldado, 2 goals, 2 assists for Villarreal in his first 2 games. Involved in all of their goals so far.
Mohamed Salah is another one. Didn't really get a chance at Chelsea. Played great at Fiorentina last year.
And now he's on to bigger and better things with Roma, one would assume. But the big surprise in Serie A this weekend was Chievo Verona. They are a perfect 6 points through their first 2 games. And they, at home to Lazio, won 4-0. 4-0.
Yeah, and Torino is second place, Sassuolo's fourth place, and Palermo's fifth place. I mean, it seems like the world of football is upside down.
Yeah, just a couple of mentions on that Chievo game. Alberto Paloschi, who's kind of like, you know, just a prospect that never really turned out with Milan and a bunch of other clubs, now flourishing at Chievo over the last couple of years. And Walter Birsa, another player who used to play with his free kick, it rivals, it wasn't as good as James for
what a goal.
Real Madrid, but it was up there. It was really, really nice. Better than Miralem Pjanic's for Roma this weekend. If you haven't seen it, check out Walter Birsa's goal. I'll find a link and I'll tweet it for you at DanRiccio590.
Speaking of goals too, we had some great bicycle kicks this week as well.
Right?
Amazing.
That was crazy. I mean, you had the Callum Wilson one, which was great. For Bournemouth.
And high degree of difficulty to bring that down and hit it off.
And he's now got 4 goals early on in this Premier League season. And you also had Lucas Ocampos do one for Marseille this weekend. He's just obviously coming over from Monaco.
Still doesn't rival Wayne Rooney's benchmark of bicycle kick goals.
Now, if you're going to, like, there's obviously some great, great bicycle kick goals over time. But Wayne Rooney's was just so ridiculous.
4 years ago.
It was a perfect pinpoint pass, but it's not like it was just lobbed up there. It was
coming in with pace.
Yeah, it was coming in with
his
pace.
His angle, his body shape, the way he hit it, unbelievable.
If he tried that 99 more times, no, he would not hit it as perfectly.
You're never going to get it like that.
He would not hit it as perfectly. And, of course, Graziano Pelé's last year for Southampton against QPR was another great bicycle kick goal. Do you have a favorite bicycle kick goal that you remember? Hashtag EFW590. Let us know on the Twitter. Quick thoughts on the Champions League group stages.
Your boys have it rough.
My old lady getting Manchester City, Sevilla, and Borussia Mönchengladbach. Although Gladbach looks horrible this year.
Yeah, so they still haven't won a game, but that's the group of death. It has to be the group of death.
Yeah, Manchester United, of course, getting a cupcake group. And the big one, I guess, is Group A with Paris Saint-Germain and Real Madrid. And also Malmo. So Ibrahimovic is going home.
And Jose Mourinho, again, escapes with another easy group outside of FC Porto. It's pretty much straightforward.
He's got to go to back to home against Porto. And Group H is the Europa League group, with Zenit, Ghent, and Lyon, and Valencia.
Wow.
And, of course, Arsenal drawing Bayern Munich again. So,
again, pretty straightforward. Olympiacos horrible in Europe, and Zagreb never wins or never draws a game in Europe
and yes,
in the Champions League.
The reason we say that the Juventus group is the group of death, Sevilla coming off winning the Europa League back-to-back years. So they're going to be a tough out, and that's going to be probably the group to watch. That is Group D. That's it. Time for Creme de la Creme to end the show. Cash rules everything around me. Green gets the money. Dollar, dollar bill, yo. A lot of plaudits going to Bafétimbi Gomis, but I will go with Andre Ayew. Goal and an assist for the better of the two Ayews in the Premier League. And anybody who knew anything about the Ayews knew that he was going to be the better of the two.
Even if he was the older brother, he was the better one.
And he will always be the better one, as Jordan Ayew already on the bench for Aston Villa. Who's your guy?
I'm going with Southampton collecting their first win of the season thanks to Dusan Tadic. Brace and Graziano Pelé also got a goal, but Dusan Tadic was on fire in that game.
Man of the match for that one goes to Steven Whitaker for his idiotic red card.
Two yellows in 3 minutes? What was it? Something like that?
It was something stupid. But both of them were really, really dumb yellow cards as well. A lot of red cards, actually. 7, I think, this week in the Premier League. So it was kind of a wild and crazy weekend, as it always is. No Premier League this weekend.
Boo.
European qualifiers. No Sebastian Giovinco for Italy.
Snore.
So that's a bit of a disappointment for Toronto FC fans. He's got an adductor injury. Probably not playing for TFC this weekend, but he is heading back to Canada. That's it for us. For Thomas Michalakos, I'm Dan Riccio, European Football Weekly. We'll talk to you next week. I'm going to wait till the beat go in.